Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham Dhammang Sanghang Namasami. Friends, in line with the theme of this retreat, taking refuge in the truth, I wanted to speak to you about an old Buddhist tradition which is called an action of truth, or a satcha kriya in the Pali language. You all made an action of truth when you were doing the evening recitation. You said, for me, there is no other refuge. The Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha is my only refuge. By the power of this truth, may I grow in the Master's way. There are many, many verses, devotional parts of the devotional chanting that has some kind of a line, which is, by the power of this truth, may there be well-being. By the power of this truth, may I be free from fear, and so forth like that. This is called satcha kriya. And the belief is, by actually creating a truth, having the truth not just be parroted as a magic phrase, but a truth which is arising from one's own experience has got the power to turn the course of nature, or has the power to put a different warp in the fabric of the universe. And it's this way that we get out of the endless cycle of karma and rebirth and going around and around in the same rut, on the same merry-go-round. If you were able to save yourself by being good, you wouldn't need the truth. But being good alone is not enough to realize, to have the breakthrough. The thing that does it is this this truth, which cuts through karma. Now, I'm going to give you an illustration of how this works by means of telling a fairy tale. That's funny, isn't it? A fairy tale is going to explain the truth. The Jataka stories are the stories of the past lives of the bodhisattva before the previous lives of the person who incarnated as Gautama Buddha. And in the past lives, he attained the perfection of several different kinds of virtues. And one of the virtues that was perfected through many lives was this virtue of truth. And this little story is, well, one time the Blessed One was walking around in the Magadha country with a group of bhikkhus, and there came to be a forest fire. Some of the younger monks were frightened and thought they better start a backfire to protect themselves. We know that technique. And they ran and got their torches and went to make a backfire to protect the lodging where they were staying. But the more elder senior monks told them not to do that and said, how can you think of making a fire when you have the Blessed One right here with you? Let's go visit the Blessed One. So they went to where the Buddha was. And as they were approaching the Buddha, when they got within a certain distance of the Buddha, they were carrying their lit torches, and the torches just snuffed out as if by magic. And then the fire came, but the area surrounding where the Buddha was didn't burn. The fire stopped as if it had come to a lake or a body of water. And subsequently, the Buddha told the story of his past birth. He had been born as a quail. No sooner had he picked his way out of the shell and started to be cared for by his parents than the fire came, which is the fire that usually comes at that time of year. He was too little and too weak to do anything. His mother and father flew away, leaving him alone in the nest. And this brave little quail remembered his lineage, the power of the past Buddhas, the power of awakening. And from this memory, this empowerment, he spoke a truth. Now, I'm going to go to verse, and I'm going to recite the poem in Pali and English for you to listen to, and then we can think about it. So this is how it goes.
Atilokesilaguno satchang soche anundaya tena satchena kahami satchakiriyamanuttaram.
There is in this world the quality of virtue, truth, purity, tenderness. In accordance with this truth, I will make an unsurpassed vow of truth.
Avanjitva dhamma balang saritva pumbake jine satcha balam avasaya satcha kiriyamakasaham.
Sensing the strength of the Dhamma, calling to mind the victors of the past, in dependence on the strength of truth, I made an unsurpassed vow of truth.
Santipakka apattana, santipada avanchana, mata pita chanikanta, jataveda patikama.
Here are wings with no feathers, here are feet that can't walk. My mother and father have left me. Fire, go back.
Sahasatche kate maiham mahapanjalito sikhi vanje sisola sakari sami udakang patwayata sikhi satchena me samonati esa me satcha paramiti.
When I made my vow with truth, the great crested flames avoided the 16 acres around me as if they had come to a body of water. My truth has no equal. Such is my perfection of truth. So, here are wings with no feathers. Here are feet that cannot walk. My mother and father have left me. What I love about this verse, a lot of the other similar stories have a truth which is a little bit like, sort of like pompous and bragging and giving the great qualities of the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha, and asserting something really strong and powerful as the basis for our protection. For example, there's one in the Ratana Sutta is also a great big Satchakiriya. It gives in that case, the city was having a plague, and they called the Buddha to rescue them from the plague, and his disciples to walk around the city chanting this Satchakiriya, which caused the demons and the plague to go away. And one of the verses in the Ratana Sutta is Varo Varanyu Varado Varaharo Anuttaro Dhamma Varanga Desai. He who is the best, the bringer of the best, the giver of the best, the knower of the best, he taught us the very best supreme Dhamma by the power of this truth. May there be well-being. So that's typical. But this poem about the quail then shows how actually even a vulnerability, even a weakness, if it's a truth, can be so powerful. A lot of times when we are practicing the Dhamma, we understand the difference between what is wholesome and unwholesome, and we undertake this project to start learning how to purify the heart of unwholesome dhammas, unwholesome states of mind. We find the ways to prevent and abandon these unwholesome states and ways to cultivate wholesome states. And yet, until we complete the journey, that effort is very difficult, and it seems like it's almost, how often are we completely successful? There's even a danger. Especially we feel this when we're in monastic form, because we're supposed to be very pure in our virtue and in our mental states and in our speech, and so there's an even stronger tendency to take our unwholesome states of mind and sweep them under the rug. And that's not a tendency. In the Sangha, we have ways to bring these things out and to have them be out in the open where they can be seen clearly and acknowledged and worked with. That's part of the beauty of the monastic training, is there is such a gentle and beautiful way to allow and bring out the difficulties so that we're not forced to hide. But it's kind of within human nature to try to get away with things or to hide what's unwholesome, and that makes it even more difficult to cope with. And you may find, something happens, somebody speaks to you in a way that's irritating. And just at that moment, you don't snap at them or you don't react to it, but you've got this little aversion thing that rises up. But you just put it, you think you abandoned it, but you really didn't. You just kind of put it in your pocket. And then, sometime later on, the same person makes a mistake or something, and then boom, the hammer comes down because you got some aversion, you got an unwholesome dhamma, and you just were carrying it without being opening and sensing and seeing what it is right at the spot, right? Partly what this is saying is even like little things, that if we are able to say things that are true, that are able to acknowledge weakness, able to acknowledge our inability, that actually has the capacity to turn the tide of nature and to stop the fire of passion, aversion, and delusion. Another example of how this acknowledgement of weakness can be powerful. I sometimes had the experience, I don't know if anybody else has, where one is trying during a meditation retreat to stay fully present and aware just within the project of the retreat, to develop meditation and to have this this present moment awareness, and yet the mind continuously wants to get involved with plans or planning the future and regretting the past and replaying old conversations and, you know, this kind of thing. And it's like the more we struggle with it and try to use willpower, the less successful we are in overcoming the tendency of the mind to try to run away from the retreat. But then it could happen at a particular moment that one is able to stop using the technique of resistance and willpower and just say, you know, causes and conditions, this is the mind I have right now. And then somehow the struggle stops and one becomes able for a while to come back to the project. It's like we put down the flag and then something shifts and it all becomes possible. Another something I like about this verse is that it shows to me a characteristic of a true statement, which is that a true statement is very simple, a very direct, kind of plain, and it has that characteristic of not being deceptive. And so as we listen to different teachers or go in different situations in life, and we, you know, you hear a lot of statements or a lot of words, you know, our universe is filled, there's a tsunami of words, you know, flowing through the air and the internet, you know, there's a flood right now of words. So the question then is, you know, how can we recognize the true Dhamma as opposed to something which is maybe a diversion or a masquerade or some misunderstanding? And so one aspect of it, I believe, is this aspect of simplicity and directness. It's said in the sutta that the truth is not deceptive. Here's one. There is suffering. Okay. You know, it's that's not a statement, like that's not a magical mumbo jumbo trick statement. It's just, you know, right there, it's bald, it's right there. Anybody can understand it. Even a little child can understand it. There is suffering. And suffering has a beginning and suffering has an end. So from these simple, straightforward, and this is a characteristic of the Dhamma. Actually, in the olden days, the Brahmanical religions had a pretty strong theory about magical mantras, words that had power, words that had power to help your deceased relatives to stay in heaven or to bring you good luck or bad luck or things like that. And those mantras were memorized in a way that was very careful. They had to be recited exactly in a particular way to have their magical effect. And if the priest would even just change a syllable or something, instead of becoming a blessing, that could be a curse. And so it was, you know, kind of like a secret science. And so then what the Buddha done, as he'd done in so many cases, he took something that's part of our human nature. People want to have faith, they want to believe in things, they're looking for lucky charms. And he transformed and elevated something that's kind of natural and easy for humans to do and brought it up to a much more like sublime a profound level as something which is part of the progress of wisdom. So then what I'd like to encourage you to do is to think about, do you have your own satchakriya, your own active truth, or your own truth that you know that becomes real for you in this moment? And can you experience the way in which something can happen where a recognition or an arising of understanding or the arising of meaning can become deeply transformative in how you practice? So perhaps you would have read some books about the Dhamma or hear some Dhamma talks, and you've heard about, oh, say, the Four Noble Truths, and it kind of seems like a bit of a catechism, or you don't really understand the relevance of it. But then through reflection, through considering how this applies to your life circumstance, or perhaps through seeing an example about how this understanding is manifested in another person, or perhaps through hearing a teaching, something can like open up, and that which were just words on the page suddenly becomes meaningful, and you can say, oh, now I see. So that way, the truth then is not something that's a dead letter that just exists in the Pali Canon, but the truth is something that is arising right here in the moment out of the encounter of your own mind, your own human heart with the laws of the nature, laws of the universe, with nature, with the Dhamma, with the teaching, or with something that you're encountering. And so out of that meeting, there comes the arising of some truth. So as this little quail encountered the fire, it was right in that storm that his truth rose and became empowered. So that truth didn't really exist until that moment. And yet in another way, the truth is also timeless. So the truth is something that arises in the moment, but the truth is something which is kind of a keyhole that lets us enter into that which is timeless. In this case, the quail remembered the Buddhas of the past. He remembered the strength of the Dhamma, and that there was this tradition going back through the eons. And then by putting his little truth on top of this great tradition, it became empowered. Something which is a falsehood needs to be constantly maintained. If you suppose that, I read in the paper once there was some fellow who was pretending to be wealthy, and he'd like got an apartment, an expensive apartment in New York, and some good expensive work of art, and then he started like telling people that he was the black sheep of some famous wealthy family, and was then tricking people out of their money. And did this for a certain number of years. And if you can imagine, if your life is a lie, how much work it is to keep your story straight. How much stress, how miserable and how effortful it is to carry a false flag. But the truth doesn't need to be carried at all in that way. The truth just is what it is. And so because the truth doesn't need so much care and feeding the way that a falsehood would, in that way, the truth is timeless. So in that way, if one is perhaps in a state of confusion about something and trying to figure it out, trying this and trying that, and not being sure if this is the right way or not, and then there's some kind of a discovery, some kind of realization, and some kind of like recognition, yes, I've got a hold of the Dhamma. I've got a hold of some corner of the Dhamma. I really know this. I really know it for myself. I know it with my own experience, with my own heart. I'm sure of it because I've experienced it. Then that becomes your rock. That becomes something which gives a kind of stability, even though we know about impermanence and we know that about staying in being present for the moment and not getting lost in past and future. So we have both. We have both this surfing on the flow of impermanence, and we have this stability, this confidence, and this comfort in the truth, which is timeless. I alluded before to the idea that, for example, in listening to a Dhamma talk, it's possible that truth can arise. It's also possible sometimes the truth arises in giving a Dhamma talk or in having a Dhamma conversation. That's one of the reasons why this is such a great job. Because actually some of the greatest things arise out of conversation about the Dhamma between people. Some fantastic realizations arise. Possibly the archetype for the power of that kind of truth that arises in teaching the Dhamma is the story surrounding the Buddha's first sermon, the Dhammacakkappavattana Sutta, the Sutta Turning the Wheel of the Dhamma, where the Blessed One had returned to his five disciples and explained the middle way and explained the Four Noble Truths and how these truths should be practiced, and how he himself has practiced and accomplished what is called for in each one of the Four Noble Truths. And then at the end of the Buddha's speech, one of the disciples called Anya Kondanya makes an exclamation. And he said, "Oh, everything that is subject to arising is subject to passing away." That was his realization. And then the devas started to have a great party and celebrate, and they were chanting, here is the Blessed One, and he's taught this truth, and so on and so on, and that it was going like one group of gods would announce it, and then another group of gods would hear it, and they would repeat the announcement, and so this telephone thing was going all throughout, up and down the heavens, and the sky was, the earth was shaking, and the sky was flashing with comets, and it's like all of nature rose up in this massive celebration, but it wasn't that they rose in the celebration just at the moment where the Blessed One was giving the teaching, but it was where the teaching was received, see, where the transmission happened. That's where the power was. And so throughout the earlier parts of this retreat, you've heard so much Dhamma being conveyed to you by Ayah Santachitta and Ayah Anandabodhi in terms of the foundations of mindfulness, about taking refuge, and so on. And every time this happens, you know, somewhere in the room, there can be somebody who had the light bulb go on and said, oh, this is the Dhamma that I can use. And so that's really great. So that's a part of what this Satchakriya is. So now that I don't want to go on too long, but I'd like you to consider, if you ever come across in any of the chantings or any of the devotional things in Buddhism, and you hear this kind of phrase, something like etena sacchiva jena, hotu te jayamangalam, it's something etena sacchiva jena, it's by means of this, the power of this truth. Then you know that's a satchakriya. That's an act of truth. And what's being celebrated there is the strength of the realization that happens when we gain internally the meaning of some aspect of the Dhamma in a way that we've got hold of it and it cuts through just simply going around and around in the merry-go-round of the normal karmic ruts that we get into. And it's actually not by means of willpower, but by means of truth. I mean, willpower is good, it's part of the practice, but it's by means of truth that we're able to come to real, lasting, profound change that will leave us a different person than we were before, and also make us change in a way that we don't go back. So with these little thoughts, I thank you for your patient listening.
Andamayang tamagataya sadhu karang tadamase sadhu, sadhu, sadhu anumodami.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.